So, as I would understand, you guys are doing a series on discipleship and how to be, I mean, basically good Christians, which is disciples. And so Jesus asked a very simple question on to his disciples, but he says, if you want to be a follower of me, and he gives this. So he says in Matthew 16, verse 24, he says, then Jesus told his disciples, if anyone would come after me, meaning if anyone wants to follow me, which would be hopefully many of us in this room, he says this, three things. First one, let him deny himself, number one. Number two, he says, let him take up his cross. And three, let him follow me. These three things we will look at. He will deny himself, he will pick up his cross, number two, and number three, he will follow him. Then the next verse says this, for whoever would save his life or keep his life or hold on to his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. Now, again, I said in the first, you guys have so many servers, so many people, so many things. And I realized even so after speaking with the first guy, some of the things you might have heard me said before, even though I don't see you guys so much. But, you know, one of the most fundamental questions, I think it's probably the most important question that you as a Christian in your journey with God will have to answer is the question that Satan posed to God according to his servant Job. And so Satan went on some tour, like he visited the world. Satan world tours. And Satan came back and God called him in. It's interesting, I don't know what the relationship was in the heavens that Satan could visit God and God could call Satan in, but he did. So he called him in and he asked him, so from your tours, what did you see? And he said, well, you know, this, that, and the other, and God couldn't wait. He's like, did you see my man Job? Did you see how he serves me? Did you see how he is full out for me? And Satan says, yes, I did. But can I say that I would serve you as well if I get as blessed as Job is getting blessed. If meaning to serve you have so much benefits in, I mean, who will not serve you? And so Satan is saying, why is Job serving you? Now that is a very important question. Why are you serving God? Why are you serving God? Now, a little bit of me having to answer that question. I'm just telling you, that question will be answered. That question will be answered. If you have the wrong answer, you're in trouble. Yeah, and we hopefully will be able to at least test what is the answer. And I don't know. Life will show you what's really in your heart and what's the real answer. But it's important that we know. So, look, before I got saved, I must say it's a challenge to preach the same preach in the space of 2 hours. I feel like I feel like I need to say something new the whole time. So all right. So when I was growing up, I had a desire to be great. Would you believe it? I wanted to be great. I wanted to be adored, and I wanted to be somebody that at the end of my life they would remember me as somebody great. Yeah, and I messed that opportunity up badly because on my pursuit, not really, but I got sidetracked a lot and I started doing a lot of drugs and a whole lot of things, threw away every every talent that I had, I kind of threw it away. And then I was not one of those Christians that, you know, when I got saved, I had to give up so much. I was nothing. I was a mess. And then God saved me. Whew. Jesus saved me. And then pretty soon after Jesus saved me, he started using me. You won't believe it. Me. He started using me. And then the dream arises again. I can be great for God. Like, you know those books that you get, Faith Heroes, God Generals? I had new vision, a new purpose. Now, how it works, if you want to be a God General and great for God as I want it to be, I mean, you can't be one of those loser Christians that comes to evening congregations, the sacrifices, and the morning congregations, guys. I wake up early. I wake up early, 5 o'clock, whatever it would take. I spend a couple of hours every day reading the Word and prayer. And I would see those that does it once every now and then or even little. Because I had a goal and I'm willing to sacrifice and lay my life down. I wouldn't miss a meeting. We'll be at every prayer meeting. And pretty soon, yes, you won't believe it, I became full of the Word, full of prayer, full of the things of God, full of anointing. And we started a youth. So happy for the youth. My kids is at that youth. So, and the youth grew. The youth grew in the space of a couple of months, bigger than the congregation that I was part of. And I'm a year and a half saved. So it exploded. This little heart didn't handle that well. This little heart thought he's something, right? And my dream was working out just as I imagined. I'm going to be great for Jesus. And then a year and a half later, suddenly, the type of initial grandeur of the ministry or the initial fruit started fading a little bit. And I once had time with the Lord. It was the season that I had time with the Lord, but also for various voices, ways that God spoke to me. And the message that God made clear to me is this: you will never be as great. You will never be that guy that you are dreaming to be. That vision that you have to be so awesome for God, that will never happen. That's the encouraging word Jesus spoke to me. You won't become that. And then I was thinking, but if I'm not going to be so great, then I can at least spend as much time as those losers do. I mean, why would I sacrifice so much if I get out so little? And the question for me is, like, why am I in it? Why am I attending everything? Why am I praying? Why am I giving? Why am I in it? I had to conclude over a period of time, I had to conclude that the only reason that I'm in it, and God had to work this in my heart, the only reason why I'm in it is because I'm His. And it's for Him. Now, Henry will have to go for this same exercise again. I asked Henry beforehand, I asked him, I just want to say, I don't know who the car gods is in the six, but in the four, I was trying my charm. I thought I'm the guest preacher here. At least they will make me park inside. So I come here and I said, listen, is there parking in front? The guy says, you can park over there. I said, so that means no. He said, yes, that's no. So I'm like, all right, and I go park all the way there, and I'm standing there way before any of the other elders in the prayer meeting. And here I see Henry is driving in with his car right in front. Anyway, it's the woman you guys. He's blaming his wife. But anyway, so Henry has a nice car. I don't know if you guys see. Now I would probably they feel like my car would have damaged the image of this church. So they allowed Henry to park there. So I asked Henry, I mean, is that car for sale? He said, no, it's not for sale. I said, well, 100,000. She's crazy. She know how much that car is worth. I said, what about 500,000? He said, I'm in. I said, I thought the car is not for sale, but for 500,000 it is. If you would have stopped at 500,000, I'd say, what about 1,000,000? 2,000,000? I'm willing to pull out 10 million rand for your car. Is it still not for sale? It's for sale. It's for sale. It's for sale. Now, I've had the opportunity to work with guys like you guys, like many. And I've heard many said that I'm not for sale until the right price comes. No one is for sale in worship. Treasure in the field, Jesus. I give it all. Treasure in the field, on my knees, up and down. What about that new job offer? Well, and it's amazing how I've seen those that would communicate they are not for sale. But when, I mean, I'm not for sale if you give me 100,000. But if you give, now I want to say, if in the spirit, in your hearts, there's a price tag over you, and the enemy knows it. He knows your price. And if you have a price, he will bring it. If you are for sale in some ways, he will bring it. What Jesus is saying, whoever wants to follow me must deny himself. It's a position. It's a position that you take in, that somehow, somewhere in your life, you've made that decision that I'm not for sale. I'm his. No matter what is brought to me. Now again, guys, this is a journey and this is a process that God will show you what is in your heart. But I want to say, ultimately, if you want to be successful in any way to follow the Lord, you need to know, you need to deny yourself. Now, there was another verse that I read on, the next verse, in verse 25, if you guys would remember. It says, whoever holds on to his life will lose. Yes, I mean, this AV guy is just incredible. I mean, I'm not even asking. He's like, he's reading my mind. So whoever would save his life, in the English Bible, there's one word, life. In the Greek, original Greek, life is, there's three different words in the New Testament. The one is bios, which is a Greek word, which is translated life in our Bible, which just means something is alive, it lives. Right? I don't know how to explain, sorry. And then And then there's a second, the Greek word is psyche. That means self-life. It's that one. It's my life. Whoever loses his life, self-life. That's that life with all the dreams and ambitions and all the things that is yours. It's my life. That was a song in the 90s when I was... It's my life. It's that one, psyche. It's the same in Revelation 12:11. It says that he will overcome the devil. He will overcome the devil by the blood of the Lamb, the word of their testimony, and not loving their lives. It's psyche. We'll lose psyche, self-life. And so any self-life, you need to, it needs to be denied. It loses it. But then it says you will gain life. It's a very interesting. You will lose your life, you will gain life. It's a different Greek word, by the way. We just read life. It's a different Greek word. It's spelled out better in John 12. But you will gain life. That word is Zoe. Where's Zoe? Zoe, do you know what your name means? Zoe's name means life and abundance, or spirit life. When Jesus says in John 10, I come to give you Zoe. And Zoe in abundance. I come to give you life and life in abundance. This is life, John 17:3. This is life, that you will know me and the Father who sent me. Remember when, before we got saved, I don't know, even the things that I hope for and I sometimes would get, it will be great, it will be nice. I always wanted to kiss that girl and then I kiss her. I mean, there's no problem, it's all good and so on. But I somehow thought it will make me feel better. Somehow it still left me empty. It was like, it's good, it's nice, but it's just... La-di-da, what's that? What is it?
No.
I must use other examples for these boys. And then the day I got saved, the moment that I met Jesus, suddenly I got life. I got satisfied. I got fulfilled in the inside. I had joy that was not bound to circumstances and situations. I truly experienced life. What Jesus is saying, it's impossible to have both lives together. You can't have both. You can't hold on to Zoe, your self-life, and have Zoe. What did I say now? Zoe, you make it difficult because people are getting confused. So you can't hold on to self-life. You can't hold on to your dreams. You can't hold on to your vision. And hold on to the life of God. You choose. Jesus says, you lose yourself. You deny yourself. That's the key. Treasure in the field. That's it. You sell it all. It's sell it all. It's not just my bank account. It's my life. I gave it all for that treasure. That's it. Now, in 1 Corinthians 6, verse 19 and 20 says, or do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, whom you have from God? You are not your own. You're not your own. I don't think we do get that. Verse 20. For you were bought with a price, so glorify God in your body. You are not your own. You don't belong to yourself. Do you have vision? Do you have dreams? Now, what do I want to say on that?
Ecco qua.
In the olden days, whenever there was a slave and a master, when a slave would, and I mean, a slave would be bought by a master, so you are this man's possession. You think when they call out the slaves together, they will say, okay, slaves, today we're going to develop your vision. We're going to speak on how to make your dreams come true. I mean, we laugh, but you live in that world. Now it's different. You're different than the world. Because the world are depending on themselves to make their dreams come true. You ask God to make your dreams come true. I that's true. That's what God does. You guys are spurts because, you know, you ask God to make it come true. It's so easy, guys. You don't have to have vision. You don't have to have dreams. It's this freest thing. I don't have to make it up anymore. I don't have to think it up anymore. I just can obey Him. That's all. I can just obey Him. I had my story of my great grandfather was in a seminary in Switzerland. He's Swiss. And in that seminary, as I would understand it, you would write in, and then, but the day that you write in and are accepted at that seminary, you need to sign a paper that when you finish here, you have to go wherever they send you. So he's in Switzerland, and they send him, they hear of a group of people in the middle of South Africa, in the Karoo, in a place now known as Williston. It was then known as Amandelboom. There wasn't any true community. There was a community, as I would say, that was called bastards, because it was merely a bunch of voortrekkers that moved past that area and slept with the locals. And out of them come a race that was rejected. And so all the way from Europe, they heard about that group of people, and they said, yeah, I think you can go there for us. Now, you must understand, middle of the Karoo in the 1800s, that's a different story. There's nothing. There's no town. Today there's a town which you miss quickly. Then there wasn't even that. There's nothing. And so then he went there. Find the people. Try to learn the language. Try to, you know, preach Christ and do what he needs to do. Then he sends the mission board a letter, and he said, it's going well, but I need a wife. Send wife. Now, guys, I don't know how it works, but I think this is how it works. When you were a lady at that seminary, you had to sign the paper that says, you will go and marry and be a wife to whatever missionary out in the field. Will you sign the paper? Yes, sir. So, and I promise you that's what happened. Then they send him a letter. No problem. She's coming. On this date and this date, she will be at the Cape Town Harbor. It's way before cars. So the guy goes down with his horse cart to go pick up his wife. He doesn't know what package he's going to get. No photos, no CVs, nothing. He just trusts the mission board, went like, you. South Africa, on the boat, there's a guy that will marry you when you get there. You're right. Sign the paper. So, he went there. He find her. Again, as we were joking in the first meeting, I was like, how? I don't know, it's like at the airport we have this card. Wife. So he says to her, listen, it's a long journey with a horse cart all the way back to the Karoo, to where we are, and we're going to be alone in a horse cart. You never know what's going to happen. So it will be better for us to get married immediately. So he took her from the boat, went to the little church chapel, get married, and they went off to the middle of nowhere in the Karoo. So I obviously never knew them. My mom knew the woman. Like at the end of her age, my mom knew her. And people was like an incredible, incredible person. I wonder if that contract would be given to you. Are you willing to, you become a Christian, willing to follow me? Whoever wants to follow me must deny himself, pick up his cross, doing my will, and follow me. You want to sign the paper? Ready to sign the paper here? How many of you a little bit, when you consider this? Because, I mean, this is not just a seminary. This is the living God. And that's exactly the life that he's calling you to. Oh, you want to be a follower? Just sign for me here. Now, how many of you, when you hear that, just a little bit of fear comes up in following the Lord? What if he makes me marry that guy? What if he makes me that thing? Some guys will accept it. They're like, all right, I have a chance. Anyway. Let's see. Spin the bottle. All right. How do we play spin the bottle? You must watch out now. Is it the first time you bring your girlfriend to church, huh? Okay. How do we play it? And then? Spin the bottle. Okay, so there's the kissing one. Yeah, there's different variations. I just want to see which one you're the most comfortable with. It's the kissing one. Okay, well, I'm not meaning the kissing one, which he likes to play, but I'm speaking. I'm referring to the one where you can ask the question there, what their truth or command. Do you know? Oh, you seem like very much bored with that one, right? But okay. So let's play the spin the bottle, their truth or command one, right? Now, I remember when we used to play it, you have your opportunity. But there was an unspoken thing that you never choose there, because there feels like you have a way out, and it's just like, it's like a little bit lame. So you would rather choose either truth or command. And so when you choose truth, a person will obviously ask a question that he will know, very sensitive, and will expose you, and you have to say the truth. But then command. When you give freedom to a person to command you. And so it's one thing that you have the first hit at it. But who knows, when the wheel is turning, the bottle is turning, and that bottle falls on you. And after you've crushed your friend, you look at his face and revenge is all over that face. And you know it will not be revenge, it will be revenge and some more. Right? And you see it in that person's face. How does it make you feel? Terrified, that's the word. Fearful. It's like signing the paper. Guys, by the way, that's what we're playing with God. Truth in command. Truth in command. He wants the truth. And there is nothing that we can withhold from Him. Everything, God, will say it. Now, I know we try and get away, but... And then He says, command. Sign the paper. Whoever, wherever, whenever. This is not my life anymore. I'm not trying to live for myself. I don't have this dream that I somehow ask God to make my dreams happen. I just live for Him. And whatever He commands, whatever He asks, that's what I live for. Here's the problem. And this is that will change this whole exercise completely. Some of us, and maybe most of us, are hesitant to do it and are terrified because the face that we see behind that bottle looks like our friend's face that is full of revenge. But there's a verse that says, perfect love casts out all fear. And in the context in whose life we give our hands, it should change everything. Sign the paper. You see, the fear that comes from us when God is asking that, which He is, by the way, deny yourself, is because our understanding of who He is just so limited and we fear. And if we could understand who's the one that's asking us to sign, or the bottle, who's the face behind the bottle, it will change everything. If we could know how much He loves us and how much He is for us. And this is the problem with these type of things, guys. The way that we discover His love is many times denying ourselves and fulfilling the commands. How would we know? You know, there's the story of a man that went to climb the mountain. And it got dark, and so he gets hasty in trying to do it quick. And at some stage, as he's approaching the bottom of the mountain, he slips and he hangs. But it's too dark to see what's going on. So he looks down, can't see. So he cries out to God, God, help me. God, help me. And he heard the Lord say to him, cut the rope. And he cries, anybody else? The next day, they found a man frozen to death 3 feet above the ground. Now, I don't know if that story is true because I cannot tell that story. But that's the point. How do we know to trust unless we risk it? That's the only way. And so, guys, I'm just saying, deny yourself. It's a position that at some stage we're going to decide to sign that paper. Here's my life. It's not mine anymore. It's yours. Second point. I'm going to go quicker, guys. Speak up. Deny yourself. Okay, we get that one. Sign the paper. Position that's in our hearts. Not my life anymore. I'm yours. Second one is pick up your cross. Now, my definition of the cross is, look, it's not Jesus. You don't pick up Jesus' cross. He died on the cross. So that's His cross. He died for you. But what does it mean that you need to pick up your cross? So this is my best attempt for that definition. The cross is, and your cross is this, when His will, which is this way,
crosses with your will that is this way. Now, if you have been a Christian longer than a week, you should have discovered a cross and should have discovered that sometimes your will and his will cross. All right? And so what he's asking you in that time, that you would pick up his will. Now, the first thing that I want to say on this is, it's your cross that Jesus is giving you. You just pick up his cross. Now, some of you are very zealot and desire to become holy, and you've heard that you need to die, and you want to take matters in your own hands and commit spiritual suicide. All right? Now, it's very important. You can't commit suicide by crucifixion. Have you thought about it? You can hit that nail. Guys, God is faithful. He'll kill you. He'll do it. The only thing that you need to do is to do his will. Don't take matters in your own hand. Don't go like, you know, check what that guy's doing. I'm going to also try and do that with myself now. Don't try and make up stuff to kill you. He'll do it. He'll be true. But here's the bigger problem with us when it comes to picking up our cross. We have negotiation power. And the way that we negotiate with God is, and I'm going to use the word now and I'll explain it now, is sacrifices. Now, in 1 Samuel 15:22, Samuel sends or told Saul, you know, God says, I'll give the Amalekites to you. You just need to wipe them out completely. Don't hold nothing back. Saul says, no problem. You won't believe it. God gives them into their hands. And they are destroying the Amalekites. But then as they are destroying the Amalekites, Saul is starting to see, you know, but they've got nice cows. You know, but they've got nice sheep here. And that will be such a waste. We can actually use these cows to sacrifice to God. We can use the sheep to sacrifice to God. It will be just such a waste to wipe it out. So Samuel comes to the war scene and says, Saul, how are you? Yeah, you won't believe it. God gave them into our hands. Samuel's like, just as he said, it's wonderful. And then Samuel goes like, Saul, but what am I hearing? There's cows. Yeah, the cows, man, but that's, we're going to keep that as a praise offering to the Lord. I don't know if God has ever told you to stay away from certain people. And then you go, but God, I will evangelize them. No, I didn't ask you to evangelize them. I asked you to stay away. I'll fast for them. I didn't ask you to fast for them. I'll pray for them. I'll pray more. No, I didn't ask you that. We sidestep obedience by sacrifice. Sacrifice, guys, usually when it's around, somebody's up with negotiations. Somebody's up with negotiations. It's simple. Just obey. And see, I mean, I don't want to sound like this old guy now here, but I've had some history with God, and I've learned with negotiations, you always lose. But you don't believe me. You don't believe me, you're still going to do it. And you're going to bring great deals to God. Great sacrifices that you will do. Oh God, I will, if I could just keep this, God, I'll give you more. No, just that. No. I'm just telling you now, you will always lose unless you try and deceive yourself and think your sacrifices has satisfied your disobedience. You're going to have to pick up your cross. But why does my friend, they can get away with that. My friends can listen to certain music. Why am I not allowed to? That's your cross. Don't compare with them. Pick up. Pick up your cross. He knows to work and mold you. Third point. We're landing here, guys. Third point is, and follow him. Deny yourself. Pick up your cross and follow him. I don't know who of you have ever had to do something difficult for God, something that you don't want it to do. Yeah, it must. If you say no, I'm just like, I don't know. I don't know what's happening here. But obviously, that's part of it, you know. One of the most hardest things, I'm going to tell you guys what happened with me. One of my hardest days, in my days when I thought I was great, and in my days when I thought I was awesome. In that time, God gave me what I felt like certain revelation of how the church work, of how salvation work. And I looked at the guys around me, my leaders, and I thought like, they don't have a dent of the revelation that I have. And in fact, if I could do this for them, I will bring people to much more freedom and all those type of things, you know. And then at some stage I decided, these guys are not going to change. They're not taking advice from the great apostle that I am. I'm moving on. And then God spoke to me, I mean, so clear that I need to stay. And God said, I want you to submit to these guys. And then I said to God, okay, I'll submit. I'll do it. I'll obey you. I'll pick up my cross and submit under these guys. And when they say jump, I will jump. And they say left, I will go left. And when they say right, I will go right. But let it be known today, I will not give them my heart. My heart, I'll preserve. Now, I don't know how many of you have been asked to do the will of the Lord. And you say, well, I'll give you my body, meaning I'll do it. But let me tell you now, I'm reserving my heart. I'm not throwing my heart after this. That is mine. I don't really agree with this thing. I'm just doing it because God is telling me to do it. But actually, my heart is going to, I'm going to reserve my heart. You know, the boy that went to the dentist, and the dentist said to him, lay on your back. He says, no. Dentist said, lay on your back. He says, no. Dentist straps him to the chair, and the chair goes slowly back. And the little boy goes, my body is laying back, but my heart is standing up. You cannot get my heart down. You've got the power, guys. They can get you to say yes, amen, jump up and down, but they can't get your heart to follow. You've got the power, and they can't even see it. That one you reserve. I'm not going to give them my heart. You know what I'm saying. You've picked up your cross, but my heart, I'm going to reserve. I'm not giving my heart to that man. I'll follow his instructions, but I won't give you my heart. I'll give my, I've seen it so many times, body and heart separated. It's hell. It is hell if your body and your heart is separated. I said to the other guys, I spoke to a girl today. She felt God has moved her on from the work that she is currently. And I said to her, you continue to work there, but your heart is not there anymore. That's hell, you know that. I don't know if you've ever been at a place that you work there, but your heart has already moved on. That ultimate disunity between body and heart is hell. And for some of us, serving God is hell because our body and our heart is separated. So, one day as I'm spending time with God again, I heard the Lord is saying to me, you're not giving your heart to them. And he says to me, give your heart to them. I said to my God, I can't do it. They are not holding on to the revelation. They're not holding on to, they're not walking it out as you have showed me, the very thing that you've embedded in me, Lord. Lord, for me to give my heart to them would be like, Lord, it would be like to deny myself. It went quiet. You mean like even that, God? Well, I want to ask here, you know, and I don't know why, but maybe let me just say, you know, what's the difference between submission and obedience? Obedience is outward and submission is inward. Obedience is undo what you tell me, but I preserve my heart. I can obey without being submissive. I can be obedient and still be rebellious. You sit with that heart. You're the captain of our heart. We can't see it. I sometimes can see it. And we pick it up because you can't keep it in. The rebellion just seeps through every now and then. But that's a heart's condition. And guys, your act is not enough. Your body is not enough. Want your heart. Follow him. Pick up your cross. Follow him. The verse in Isaiah 1 verse 19 says, if you are willing and obedient, if you're obedient and willing, I don't want just a yawum, yatadi, no, I want everything. I want that heart. Give your heart to them.